Welcome to Stepping Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon.
Everybody, my name's Sue Supriano, and I'm really happy to be able to speak again with John Stauber. John Stauber is the founder and director of the Center for Media and Democracy. It's based in Madison, Wisconsin. They have a newsletter called PR Watch, and that's also the webpage, I'll tell you right now, prwatch.org. And it is public interest reporting on the PR/public affairs industry. He has also written several books along with Sheldon Rampton. John Stauber, my guest, has co-authored these books. Toxic Sludge is Good for You, Lies, Damn Lies in the Public Relations Industry. That's one. Number two is Mad Cow USA, Could the Nightmare Happen Here? And the most recent one, soon to come out in paperback, it's already out in hardback, is Trust Us, We're Experts, How Industry Manipulates Science and Gambles with Your Future. And I think it's so important for people to get a handle on how we are manipulated that we're going to go through these books and get some stories, because it's, in my experience, hard to convince people who that they're manipulated, because the manipulation is so slick, basically. So I want to ask you, John, how first of all, what brought you to investigate these particular subjects? A lot of them have to do with the environment, and your most recent PR Watch is also, I read this sentence here, flak attack. To understand the evolution of corporate strategies for defeating environmentalism. That's half a sentence, but it says a lot.
Well, the common denominator here is really my work for 20 years as a peace activist, an environmental activist, a community organizer, and realizing that on the other side of every issue my friends and my community and I were addressing were these highly paid, very skilled propagandists, lobbyists and public relations experts who were successfully spending millions of dollars to buy politicians, to manipulate the media, to develop their messages and get them out in the press, and to make sure that our efforts to address whatever problem it was we were organizing around, for instance, Agent Orange spraying in national forests by the U.S. Forest Service, or Monsanto's genetically engineered bovine growth hormone, or the U.S. government's war on Nicaragua through the Contra, that these issues were managed in a way that the government and industry wanted to manage them and that the public was kept in the dark. You know, a lot of people think, gee, you know, that sounds awfully conspiratorial, that there are these powerful cabals of people who have millions of dollars to manipulate the media and manage public opinion and see to it that the progressives are defeated, that the environmentalists are thwarted. But the reality is, it may sound paranoid, but just because you're paranoid doesn't mean that isn't how it's done. And indeed, that is how it's done. And so what we do is we shine a light on the industry that does that, the strategies that are used, and the tactics that are used. And I started the Center for Media and Democracy and our newsletter PR Watch 8 years ago. And in the past 8 years, I'm sorry to say that no other organization has arisen to also do exactly what we do, which is to expose how the powerful manipulate citizens in a democracy. One of the people who I've learned about over the last 8 years and whose works I've read and who I've really come to respect is Alex Carey, the Australian academic, who unfortunately passed away over a decade ago. But Carey was one of the few academics who wrote about how corporations and governments, and really the two are just opposite sides of the same coin, even closer than that these days, how they manipulate democracy. And Alex Carey said that the 20th century was marked by three great political developments. One was the rise of democracy and democracy movements all over the world. The other was the rise of giant corporations and corporate power. And the third was the rise of corporate propaganda to protect those corporations against democracy. Now, the way I got into this was from 1988 to 1993, my job was to work with Jeremy Rifkin's Foundation on Economic Trends, and in the state of Wisconsin where I live, organize and educate consumers and dairy farmers about Monsanto's genetically engineered bovine growth hormone. The first thing I noticed was obviously there was tremendous collusion among the University of Wisconsin researchers, Monsanto, American Cyanamid, Eli Lilly, and Upjohn, the four companies developing bovine growth hormone, the Food and Drug Administration, which eventually would decide whether or not to approve it, whether it was safe for humans and animals, the U.S. Department of Agriculture, which was already saying this is going to be wonderful for farmers and consumers. They were all working together. So I filed a couple of Freedom of Information Act requests, and bingo, hit the jackpot, thanks to a really responsible and, as I learned later, very progressive attorney in Washington at the U.S. Department of Agriculture. I obtained thousands of pages of internal documents, and again, showing that even my worst suspicions couldn't begin to match the reality of how these government and corporate forces were working together to force this product onto the market and deny consumers our fundamental right to decide in the marketplace. And isn't that supposed to be part of what capitalism is about? You know, the free market is supposed to work. But to deny us our right to decide in the marketplace by not labeling the products from cows injected with hormones. I was spied upon. I organized a meeting in the fall of 1990 in Washington, D.C., and to that meeting were invited the 24 leaders of a variety of organizations from the Humane Society of the United States to Consumers Union to a couple of state legislators who were there on our side of the issue, the National Family Farm Coalition, Farmers Union, groups that were united, part of our coalition, opposing Monsanto's genetically engineered bovine growth hormone. A little while before the meeting, I got a call from a very pleasant woman who said she was with the Maryland Citizens Consumer Council and that they were mostly housewives with children. And they were very concerned because if indeed this genetically engineered bovine growth hormone came on the market, they wanted to make sure that their kids could get milk from cows that weren't stuck with a needle every day and injected with this drug to force them to produce more milk. And could they come to the meeting? I said, certainly, of course. A little while after the meeting, some weeks afterwards, I received a call from John Dillon, a reporter with a mainstream newspaper in Vermont. And he said, you know, Monsanto's bragging out here in Vermont, where they're conducting research with the University of Vermont on this hormone, that they had a spy in your meeting. So I went back and I looked at the sign-up sheet, which I still have, and there was the name of this young woman. Everyone else was known to each other. We were working together. A little sleuthing revealed that, in fact, the Maryland Citizens Consumer Council, if it ever existed, didn't exist anymore, that both of the women who'd been in touch with me, including the woman who was at the meeting, worked for something called Burson Marsteller under a woman by the name of Sheila Raviv, who's a top executive for Burson Marsteller. And Burson Marsteller, I found out, was the world's largest public relations firm that had as a client Eli Lilly, one of the companies developing the drug. Well, all this came together, thousands of pages of internal documents, spying, and I realized this is how it's done. On controversial issues, this is how they're managed. Millions of dollars from companies like Monsanto, buying off politicians, hiring spies to infiltrate activist groups, developing messages. So I swore, literally swore, that the next effort of mine as an activist would be starting PR Watch and the Center for Media and Democracy, because no one is reporting on this industry. And it is an industry. It's a multi-billion dollar industry. And the first thing that people ask is, well, surely journalists would report on this. Unfortunately, no. In fact, the academics who look at journalism, look at the news we get, the print news, the electronic news, and try to answer the question, how much of what we see here and read as news is the result of corporate and government public relations campaigns, say that on any given day, 40% or more of what we think is news is placed there by the PR industry, is part of a managed campaign, is created events. And this
This is TV and newspapers, but yeah, and radio, the whole bit.
It's really across the board. And I would say TV has become the worst. There's in the TV world something called a video news release. Mm-hmm. There are now probably 10,000 of these produced every year and provided free to TV news directors. And they're used by virtually every TV news director in the United States. So when you watch, especially your local news, but this stuff appears on national TV news too, you see what look like news stories. A good example is, here's a new drug, it's under development, here's a victim suffering from whatever this disease is, they can't wait till this drug is approved, here's an independent expert, they think the drug is going to be great, stay tuned for more information, we're going to keep following this exciting health development. Well, what they don't tell you is this exciting health development, in fact, this entire story has been provided, this 3-minute news story has been provided free to the station. And the station runs it as if it were original reporting, when indeed it's an advertisement. But it's worse than an advertisement, because if they said this is a paid advertisement from a drug company, well, you'd go, well, why am I going to believe it? It's obviously paid propaganda. But if they say station XYZ has investigated this and this is our news report, we trust them because they're journalists. Their job is to go out, investigate stories, vet information, and come back with some approximation of the truth. 10,000 of these provided every year. I've yet to find a single TV station in 8 years of searching in the United States that says, we will not use provided footage. Nor have I found a single station that says, look, when we use this stuff, as we do, we're going to label it. We're going to put something on the bottom of the screen that says, this story was provided by, you know, Upjohn Drug Company. Through the Edelman or whatever it might be public relations firm. Why not? Because that would destroy the myth that this is news. So this is how propaganda really works. The media, as distrusted as the media has become, because it's really dragged itself through the gutter in so many ways, it's still what people turn to for news and information. And if Dan Rather or Tom Brokaw or the local talking heads who are so promoted by ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox locally provide a story, people tend to trust it. In fact, these days, unfortunately, people say they get most of their information that they trust the most from their local TV talking heads, which is really unfortunate.
Yeah, and we know that most of the media in the world is owned by the same few companies, which are really about making money. We don't have to go all into this, but mm-hmm. I just have to put in my 2 cents. And they don't know oftentimes that there are alternatives. I mean, living in the Bay Area where it's kind of information overload, and there so far are alternatives. Mm-hmm. It's not true everywhere else. Mm-hmm. Alternative information is available, but people have to make an extra effort.
Exactly, and what we really need to do is, as people like Mark Crispin Miller and the folks at Fairness and Accuracy in Reporting and Bob McChesney and Laura Flanders and Amy Goodman and others have been saying and doing, is we people on the progressive end of the spectrum need to mobilize to democratize the media. I mean, why is it that literally half a dozen giant transnational corporations now own and control the publishing and electronic media that provides half or more of everything we get in the day? There's a tremendous amount of self-censorship in the media. And in our book, Toxic Sludge is Good for You, really what we do is we introduce this whole propaganda for higher industry. We show how the media, which should be watchdogging propaganda, is actually symbiotically assisting in passing on propaganda as news. And we look at the history of where did this come from, and then we look at specific examples like, well, how does the propaganda industry work on environmental issues, for instance? And it's fascinating, and we really provide our information to empower people in a democracy, because going back to that Alex Carey quote, what's going on here is a war against democracy. And I know now that people are really dying in a big war. War metaphors are especially painful. But when we're talking about big business, it's more than a metaphor. Business executives see themselves as warring every day against each other as competitors for market share, against activist organizations who are trying to change business or regulate business or democratize business. And we really have to realize that, indeed, it is a war out there, and it's a war against democracy, and that the propaganda battles are very sophisticated, and the media, mainstream media, rather than exposing them, is part of and fighting for the corporate side.
Yeah, it's so important for people to understand that, and you really can't make informed decisions without information. Mm-hmm. So that's what we're saying, and that's what you're saying, Jan Stauber, the co-author of Toxic Sludge is Good for You, Mad Cow USA, and Trust Us, We're Experts. So I would like to hear some of the details of these books. Mm-hmm. So you were just talking about Toxic Sludge is Good for You and Lies, Damn Lies in the Public Relations Industry. And Stauber, by the way, if you want to look for these books, it's spelled S-T-A-U-B-E-R. So give us some more details.
Well, a lot of people look at our second book published in 1997, Mad Cow USA, and go, whoa, what is that about? How did that book come about? Now, I think people are understanding that this book that we wrote 4 years ago is at least as important as our other two books, which are probably better known, and that the mad cow crisis that is spreading globally and killing more and more people in Britain and Europe is something that's been very well managed from a propaganda standpoint and horribly managed from a public health standpoint. And so we look at how industry and government have managed to convince people in the U.S. that this problem could never happen here. Because indeed, we have mad cow type diseases in the U.S. in sheep, in deer, in elk. They're suspected in cows and pigs. Every mammalian species has this type of disease. And when slaughterhouse waste is fed back as animal feed to livestock, it creates this cannibalistic feed loop that spreads the disease. When we wrote Mad Cow USA 4 years ago, in our last chapter, we pointed out how this practice of feeding slaughterhouse waste, rendered byproduct, back to livestock has actually gone on longer and on a larger scale in the U.S. than anywhere else, and in fact is still going on. And the really sad aspect of this is that today it's still going on. We are literally in the United States weaning calves on cattle blood protein because it's a cheap source of slaughterhouse waste. And when people and scientists and regulators in Europe and Britain hear that, they just can't believe it, because that's how these types of disease are spread. What's really developed, and is quite frightening, is we have a strain of mad cow type disease in deer and elk in the U.S. That's now epidemic in parts of the West. The state of Colorado just announced they're going to begin killing thousands of elk on game farms because this chronic wasting disease is spreading rapidly among elk. We should impose a moratorium, a ban on all interstate trafficking of game farmed deer and elk in the United States, because what we're doing is, through the trafficking in deer and elk on game farms, we're spreading this mad cow type disease throughout North America. It's already spread to states like North Dakota. It's spread up into Canada and Saskatchewan. And we're not even hearing about it in the mainstream media.
What do you mean game farms? So these are fed by humans, this?
Yeah.
Anyway, explain it a little bit more, because I think of those animals as being more wild.
Well, they are wild animals, and unfortunately in parts of the wild, in Colorado, for instance, up to 20% of the mule deer population in northeastern Colorado is now dead or dying in the wild of a mad cow type disease called chronic wasting disease. When we look at how did this mad cow type disease get into the deer, we can trace it back about 30 years to a research facility, a state research facility in northeastern Colorado, where it looks like sheep infected with American strains of sheep scrapie, mad cow type disease, were kept with deer and elk, and there appears to have been a transmission so that this type of mad cow disease in sheep moved into the deer and elk. It's a type of disease that doesn't require the feeding loop. It's actually spreading horizontally. And what's really frightening here is that as this disease spreads, there's a huge game farm industry that's developed in states like Colorado, Wisconsin, North Dakota, South Dakota. There's a business in raising penned deer and elk. Some of that deer and elk ends up on tables in fancy restaurants as farm-raised venison. Some of it is this sort of macabre sport where people pay big money to go into a penned game farm with a high-powered rifle and shoot an elk. I mean, that's very sporting, you know, walk into a pen and shoot an elk. And also there's a business in grinding up elk antler and selling that around the world for supposed aphrodisiac and other effects. But the bottom line here is that this type of mad cow disease, chronic wasting disease in deer and elk, may possibly transmit to people. We don't know for sure, but already we've seen a number of young hunters in Oklahoma and Utah die from the human equivalent of mad cow disease. Mm-hmm. And there's suspicion that they picked it up from deer and elk. The Centers for Disease Control says, well, no, we looked at their brains, and while they did have the human equivalent of mad cow disease, it wasn't British mad cow disease. Well, excuse me, but of course it wasn't. They weren't hunting in Leeds or Scotland or Ireland or Britain. You know, they were hunting in Utah and Oklahoma. Their brains resemble the victims of what we call sporadic Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease, you know, people who die, 1 in 100,000 or 1 in 1,000,000 in the U.S. of this disease, but they're young. And that's how we noticed mad cow disease spreading from cows to people in Britain. Usually this disease strikes a small number of people late in their 60s. Mad cow disease in Britain claims people at the average age of 28, just the age these American hunters came down with this disease. And there's also laboratory evidence from the NIH lab in Montana showing that the chronic wasting disease in deer and elk can flip normal human brain tissue into being infected. I mean, where's the media? You know, this should be information that's getting out there, and it's not.
I just heard that really when people think they have flu these days, it's most often food poisoning, yeah. Basically.
Yeah, that's something that we write about quite a bit in Mad Cow USA, because part of the story is how the food industry manages issues. And one way they manage issues is through food disparagement acts. You know, back in April of 1996, a month after Britain finally admitted, after a decade of denial, that people were dying of mad cow disease, Oprah Winfrey held a program on mad cow disease risks in the U.S. She had Howard Lyman, former Montana rancher turned vegan activist, very powerful, well-informed, articulate gentleman on the show. And he simply told the truth, that we're feeding cows to cows in the U.S., and if we don't stop, we're going to end up in the same predicament Britain's in. A month later, Oprah was sued, Howard was sued in the state of Texas by very wealthy cattlemen under an obscure law called the Texas Food Disparagement Act. Almost no one had heard of it before, but the law was put on the books by the food industry, specifically to intimidate journalists and activists into shutting up on food safety issues. And the law was completely un-American. You know, in America, we have the Bill of Rights, and it promotes free speech. And if I slander you, you can sue me, but you've got to prove I slandered you. Well, this puts the onus on the other foot. If you don't like what I'm saying about your beef, you sue me. I have to hire the attorneys. I have to hire the experts. I have to prove to a jury in beef country that what I said was the truth. I mean, these laws are a huge threat to free speech. And they were put on the books because anywhere from 5,000 to 9,000 people a year die every year in the United States from food poisoning, especially from contaminated meat products. And the food industry that pumps billions and billions into the media and advertising really doesn't want these sorts of issues discussed. So as their final weapon, you know, in intimidating journalists, keeping these issues out of the media, they have these food disparagement laws.
Mm-hmm. Well, and we all eat food regardless of our politics. I mean, we don't all eat the same food, and it's become obviously a very, very political issue. As are so many other things, there's really not too much you can talk about. And I noticed that you do a lot of the investigation that you do at PR Watch and in these books you've written, John Stauber, has to do with the environment. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, our time is about up. You want to say something real quick?
Well, I'll say something real quick. And one is, as my friend Andy Kimbrell says, what isn't part of the environment? And I think here at Bioneers, you know, what we're really saying and learning is that it's all environmental health. You know, that's really what it should be about. And, yeah, there's an incredible propaganda campaign, and people can take a look at our books. In every one of our books, we look at how the polluters are using propaganda to greenwash their image and convince us that they're pro-environment when they're waging war on the environment.
Well, these books and PR Watch will really help you be a more critical thinker, which is so sorely needed these days.
And it's really the only solution. There's no simple solution. Critical thinking is the way to go.
And you can go to prwatch.org. That's the webpage. And the books are Toxic Sludge is Good for You, Mad Cow USA, Trust Us, We're Experts. My guest has been John Stauber, S-T-A-U-B-E-R, if you want to look for any of this. And I thank you very much, John Stauber. My name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening.